We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Good morning, Grinders. Welcome to DFS pregame show here on Roto Grinders. I'm Jordan Cooper, a.k.a. Blenderhead, Blender HD. If you want to follow me there on Twitter. And it's Thursday. This is what we'll review yesterday's slate in the NBA and answer your DFS strategy questions. As always, I see you guys in the YouTube chat. Josh Duck, Suki Singh, real life pitcher. Sterling Woods, Doug Montgomery, Hod Lawrence, Turks 570, Bluegrass Jeff. He's probably near me. I'm in Louisville, Kentucky. So maybe if he's in the bluegrass, maybe he's in my closet. I have no idea. Bluegrass Jeff, good morning. Good morning to everyone who played NBA yesterday. We got NBA season is upon us. Season, SCN season. If you're excited about NBA season, hit that thumbs up button, right? I'm going to wave the thumbs at you until I get them here in the morning. Hit the subscribe button if you're new here. Hit the notification bell to know when we go live. I'll be on later tonight for the showdown slate. What a disgusting showdown slate for NFL tonight there is. You can pretty much make whatever lineup you want because half the players are out. So it's going to be very, very hard to get different. You're going to have to get really weird tonight. So we'll talk about that later tonight on the pre-lock show. But yesterday in NBA, how did everyone do for NBA yesterday? So a lot of the value got there and some of it didn't, right? That's just the way life works, right? If you didn't stack on 11 game slate, if you didn't stack the Celtics Knicks game that went into double overtime, you probably couldn't win. You probably couldn't win first, right? Jaylen Brown went from being doubtful to being probable to being questionable to then playing and then scoring the 76 fantasy points. Okay. At like almost no ownership. Like, what was his ownership on DraftKings? 1.26 in the Showtime, 0.83 in the 888, and in the main GPPs, 2%. Jaylen Brown. Randall was a little bit more owned. Right, 15, 16. Randall's ownership came up a little only because when Gibson and Noel were ruled out. So that didn't necessarily affect Mitchell Robinson as much as it affected Randall's ability to get center minutes. So that's how projections work, right? If you're using projections, that's when you see people get bumped. It's like this guy is out, or a starting lineup changes, right? You know, things like that. You have to pay attention the entire night because we saw this is what makes NBA DFS, work throughout the year. You can't really rest until the last game has locked. But we saw, before lock, Brown was going to play. We got word that, that Boucher was going to play. Terry Rozier was out, right? Because he was a game time decision. And then they ruled him out, 45 minutes before lock, which obviously boosts up LaMelo Ball. And boosts up there. It pretty much boosts up everyone. Ish Smith coming out, backup point guard, whatever, probably get more minutes together with Lonzo Ball. Obviously Hayward. Usage goes up, but if you saw that they were going to monitor his minutes, I mean, he still played 30-plus, Hayward. So it's like, okay, well, that's before lock. Okay, we got news. Someone is out. How does this affect the rest of the team? And now how do these players project? Well, after lock, we got, I mean, some of these are very little things, but it could significantly affect some players to an extent in which you'd be willing to play them. Malik Beasley was not going to start for the Timberwolves, okay? So with him out, with his usage out, I think it was what Okogie started instead, and he doesn't do anything. So which bumped up the projections for Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, and D'Angelo Russell. Now, D'Angelo Russell on DraftKings was 8,500. So, I mean, most likely you weren't really playing much of him there, but on FanDuel, where it was, what, 7,700 or something, that made him a much better play. Just for the fact that Malik Beasley wasn't going to be in the starting line. Malik Beasley was going to play as, you know, the sixth man or something. So Towns' projection goes up a point and a half. Edwards goes up two. So those are the 2 points in the grand scheme of things could make the difference between, it's okay, and, maybe I should get a little bit more of them. And then we got word after the 7:30 games locked that De'Anthony Melton was going to start in place of Kyle Anderson. Okay? Now, De'Anthony Melton is a good fantasy point per minute player. Now, alongside Ja Morant, his fantasy points per minute were going to go down, but his minutes were going to go up. And if you've seen how the Grizzlies, you know, rotate their players, it's most likely that De'Anthony Melton is going to come out early. So they're going to start with alongside Ja Morant, probably come out 4 or 5 minutes in, and then lead the second unit. So not only is he going to get more minutes, he's still going to have his role on basically being the key playmaker on with the second unit. So like that's the best of both worlds in his 3,600. And we had him projected for 28 minutes. He ended up playing 30. So that projection goes up. So it's not he's keeping his same role and then adding more minutes. Less usage minutes. And you saw it throughout the game, right? And he doesn't do much. Desmond Bane is taking shots. And he's just standing around doing nothing. But then once he leads the second unit, he's the 30%+ usage. So those little things. So Melton's projection goes up by 3 or 4 points because his minutes go up. I think our original minutes projection from Melton was 24. Then we bumped him up to 28. He ended up playing 30. So, I was trying to get Melton to lineups. This is after lock, right? I had Kyle Anderson in one of my – I only played 6 lineups yesterday. I originally had Kyle Anderson in, and in that lineup, I switched around to get De'Anthony Melton and move guys around. So these are the things paying attention to. Like, De'Anthony Melton put up 31.5 points for 3,600. Now, we had a lot of people that under 4K – around 4K, they put up a lot of points, right? We had Chris Duarte. We had Maxi put up over 30. Harold put up over 30. I mean, Scottie Barnes didn't have a bad day. I mean, 23.75 for almost minimum price typically would be pretty good, but not on this slate. You needed more. Jalen Green, 22. So, you at least got 20. Let's see, Evan Mobley, 41.75. And he was what? On DraftKings, he was 4,500. Almost 10x. Desmond Bane was 3,200. So he 10x'd. Josh Giddey at least put up 20. I'm just going through here. I mean, Mo Bamba was cheaper on FanDuel, so it doesn't matter. De'Anthony Melton, 31.5. I mean, Harold, even Gaff. I mean, Gaffer got 25, and he was somewhat viable. Right, you could go through here. So many people got there. Right. The Raptors didn't. Right. Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby. I mean, they kind of got blown out by the Wizards. Dinwiddie didn't play as much as people thought. Right. 4,900. We thought, 34 minute Dinwiddie. No, that didn't work out that way. And also, lost about, 5 minutes at the end because they didn't need him. Right. They were up by God knows how much. That's how fragile the projections are in the beginning of the season, right? Because sometimes you're not sure what these rotations are necessarily going to be. And even if you are, sometimes they don't produce, right? The Raptors were just chucking bricks all day, right? Jonas Valanciunas, I think, has been 3 for 21. And I don't even know how that's possible. It's not like he's an outside shooter. How do you go 3 for 21 when most of your shots are within 6 feet of the basket? I don't know how that happens. So he was more popular in FanDuel. But that's why NBA, like what I described with the starting lineup changes and everything, you got to pay attention. There are edges there. It's not just this guy's out. Oh, I just have to go. I'll be on the couch. I'll look at my phone. And if I get a news that a guy is out, that's in my lines. Like, no. Well, what happens if the starting lineup changes? Right? What effect does that have? Guys that's supposed to do this and did, like, you know, a lot of people play Precious Achiuwa. And he missed like 6 dunks yesterday or something. I don't know. And he got into foul trouble. But Boucher was in. And we don't know what their split at the center position. They have multiple guys that could play center. So just because Precious starts doesn't necessarily mean he plays 28 to 30 minutes. Yeah, if he plays 28 to 30 minutes, he's a smash at 3,100. So yes, there is upside there. But that's what you're weighting against the field, right? The field, if you take a look, Scotty Barnes, an 11-game slate to be, you know, in the fadeaway, almost 40% owned. Dinwiddie, 40-plus percent owned. Maxey, 37% owned. Jaren Jackson, who didn't really get there, 32 points, just pedestrian, 31% owned. Embiid, who suffered, obviously, he got injured. And then they just didn't bother using him in the fourth quarter because they were up by so much. So he didn't really get there for it. Right. He had like 26 in the first quarter. And he ended the game with 41 and a half. Right. So a lot of the chalky guys you didn't need. In fact, it hindered you. And even guys like Maxey, you didn't need as long as you had someone in that price range that gave you that many points. If you had Mobley, if you had Duarte, if you had Melton, if you had Harrell, like probably you need multiple of these guys. But like in my lineups, like I played 6 lineups. And one of these lineups I obviously switched because I didn't have Carl Anderson anymore. So I played 6 lineups. All 6 had Duarte and all 6 had Jeremy Grant. Now I didn't necessarily plan it out that way, but it ended up working out that way. I was using Duarte because his projection in comparison to guys like Barnes, like in that low range, I had him projected with the lowest ownership. So I projected with 17% ownership. I was off on some guys. Duarte, this is exposures. Hold on. Let me take a look at Duarte. Duarte. Yeah, 17, like in the fadeaways. Like these ownerships I make basically for that type of contest. So for the fadeaway, 17. Where am I going here? I got to switch around. 17. Right? But Maxey was going to be a lot, much more owned. 40% owned. Barnes was going to be around 40. Actually, he ended up being slightly higher. Like LaMelo, I only had for 10, but I mean, he ended up coming in higher. So I don't think I adjust. I built these before. No, 10%. So I was off on him. I was off on Embiid. If I projected Embiid better at twice this ownership, I wouldn't have had him in 5 out of 6 of my lines. It would have been more likely to be Towns there. The Jeremy Grant, I found, based on running lineups, based on ceiling, was the lowest owned. He actually came in less owned than 13%. I think he came in 7%. He was 7% in the contest that I was playing. So what did Jeremy Grant come in the fadeaway? 11. Okay. So a little bit under. But for the positional scarcity of small forward, power forward on DraftKings, the guards, you could fill up the guard spots. No problem on DraftKings. It was that small forward, power forward type of spots. I thought the best ceiling plays for their ownership were Grant and Michael Porter Jr. And that's purely from running lineups. What did you see in those games? No, I didn't see anything. I'm literally running lineups and looking at combinations of, you know, projection versus ownership. That's all I'm doing. And I was just getting a lot of Grant and Porter. Derek White on DraftKings. I had Derek White on DraftKings. I am at 13% owned, and he was like nothing owned, like almost nothing, 4-5%. So when you run lineups, I mean, it's very, getting the ownership right, you need to get closer than this. Like, I did not get close on some of these guys. And that would have dramatically changed, like, what lineups I would have played. Probably still would have gotten to Grant. Probably still would have gotten to Michael Porter Jr. Probably would have had maybe only one out of six with Scottie Barnes. Maybe none with Fred VanVleet. I had Fred VanVleet at 30%. And he came in higher than that, right? No, around 30 in the fadeaway. Right, okay. So I was about accurate on that. It's the Embiid one. I thought there was more people. I thought, you know, Jokic is there and Towns is there. Obviously, Jaren Jackson is there. That could fill a center spot. I thought it'd be more spread out. I also played a lot Mo Bamba in 5 out of 6 lineups on DraftKings. Mo Bamba and Nurkic for their ceilings, because more people are going to be playing Embiid, Towns, Jokic, you know, that range. But I still obviously had Embiid. It's hard not to get Embiid in 5 out of 6 lineups when I have him at 14%. That's the point. If I put him at 30 there, like, these lineups would have much higher ownership, and I would have played different lineups. So just to show you what I have one Kuzma lineup. What was that lineup look like? Right. And also, you know, if you notice here, I'm playing Washington and Toronto players together. So Fred VanVleet is in one lineup, right? It's in the one lineup that has Kyle Kuzma and Spencer Dinwiddie. So, like, Scottie Barnes, Dinwiddie, Barnes, Dinwiddie, Barnes, no Dinwiddie. But Barnes wasn't the key player. Dinwiddie was more the key player. And VanVleet was a key player. So I put in those correlations here. So if I go to player groups, so these are the player groups that I have. Remember, I'm only making 6 lineups, but I'm really making 300 lineups and then picking the 6 that I'm playing. So here from yesterday, here are groups that I made. And if you're playing a ton of lineups, you could use these types of groups also. So in all my LaMelo Ball lineups, use 1 of 2 of Duarte, Turner, and Sabonis, right? I mean, I didn't end up playing Sabonis or Turner, but I mean, that's why Duarte Ball. You understand why my Ball lineups have Duarte, why I have 6 Duarte lineups, because I have like 5 LaMelo Ball lineups. Okay. My next group is make sure that Sabonis and Turner aren't together. Typically, they compete for rebounds. So I make sure that, you know, if this group works with 2 players, min 1, max 2, I'm going to get Duarte and 1 of Sabonis or Turner. That's essentially these 2 groups work together for that fact. And I have only play 1 of Harold, Gafford, or Kuzma. Now, the Kuzma one is, it could just be Harold or Gafford, because obviously they're direct backups of each other. But Kuzma, the rebound-wise, maybe takes away rebounds. So, I mean, you didn't need to put Kuzma there, but I did. Because most likely I wasn't playing much of any of these guys. Anyone. And then I have, if Fred VanVleet is in the lineup, use 1 to 2 of Dinwiddie, Kuzma, Gafford, Harrell. So basically that first group was just made so that if I do play Fred VanVleet, I'm going to get Dinwiddie plus 1 of the other 3. And OG Anunoby, I got rid of, so that group doesn't. I did the same. Basically did the same thing with OG. If I play OG, 1 to 2 Wizards, right? And separate VanVleet and OG and Anunoby together. Same thing. Barnes, Precious Achiuwa, and Anunoby, the secondary players on the Raptors, separate them. Okay, then I have a group. Don't play Anderson, Bane, and Melton together, right? So only play 1 of these guys. Most likely they're playing very similar positions. Don't play Mobley and Jackson together. both sides, you know, competing rebounds as well as foul trouble, especially when it comes to Triple J. Most likely, they're going to be covering each other. So rebounds and fouls are going to be negatively correlated. And I have this. If Evan Mobley is in the lineup, use one of the Grizzly, the cheap Grizzly guys that I have. Anderson, Melton, Bane. Then I have don't play Wood and Towns together. The two sides of the game, right? Centers, you know, opposing centers. Then I have don't play Towns and Edwards together because at their prices, I figure if one hits the ceiling, the other doesn't. This one, I left out Ingram for my player pool, but this is don't play Valanciunas and Ingram together at their prices. Don't play Harris and Embiid together at their prices. Don't play, this is if Ingram's in the lineup, use 1-2 of Maxey, Harris, or Embiid. But I took Ingram out of my play. Don't play Embiid and Valanciunas together, opposing centers. I make these groups as I add people to my player pool. So it's not like I just go through, you know, it's like, okay, let me look at every player on this list. It's like, no, I go game by game and adjust the people that I want to play. So basically the highest projected players, not who do I want. I just go by the numbers. Who projects well in this game? Okay, give me those three guys. Who projects well on the other side of this game? These two guys. Okay, how did these three guys and these two guys interact? Well, probably there's two centers, so I don't want to play them both together. And then you start making the groups. So I just wanted to show you all the groups. I wouldn't be doing this every day, but since it's the start of the NBA season, people always ask, you know, what types of groups do you make? Here's one that if Jonas Valanciunas is in the lineup, use 1-2 of Maxey or Harris. Because obviously Embiid's not going to be part of it because they're opposing centers. Don't play Bamba and Poeltl together. They're opposing centers, another group. Don't play Murray and White together, right? Two guards of the same team at similar prices. You could play them together, but I chose not. If Deontay Murray is in the lineup, use 1-2 of Bamba and Suggs. Okay. If Derek White's in the lineup, use 1-2 of Bamba and Suggs. Okay. So I get, you know, Spurs Magic, kind of 1-1 together. Don't play Jokic and Porter together. Okay. Their prices. If Jokic puts up 75 points, Porter probably doesn't put up 45 at his price. And then I have don't play Nurkic and McCollum together at their prices. And that's it. There you go. So I did all these groups knowing that I was only making six lineups. Okay. And when you see the lineups here, these weren't just like, oh, if you see here, look at the number up here, 300. I didn't just build six and say, give me 100% Jeremy Grant. I did not put in, you see here, no exposures, no nothing here at all. Now, if I'm building 150, if I'm doing a large lineup, maybe there are certain players that I'm capping or certain players that I want more of specifically. So maybe I go, I want at least 20%, but no more than 60%, and then start running the lineups. Or I run the lineups and I see that I'm getting way too much of someone. It's like, if I choose my 20 or 50 or six, from this set, I'm just going to end up with like 100% of someone. If I'm fine with that, then that's fine. At that point, it's just a diversification, just a risk tolerance issue. It's all about risk management. That has nothing to do with whether or not the lineup's good. I could find 50 lineups with Chris Duarte that are great. Do I want to play all 50 though? Well, you could. They're all great. But if Chris Duarte has 8 points, he bombs all of your lineups. If he puts up 40, he helped all of your lineups. So just, that's the risk tolerance issue. That's all exposures and everything are just all a matter of risk management. It's not a strategy. Being over or under is not a strategy. You want to build plus EV lineups. I found that the range of lineups that I was looking in was somewhere between 120-ish% owned and 160, like that range. Because going through all my 300 lineups and seeing what lineups project well for the lowest ownership. And this first one, just it knocked everyone's, you know, 408 from a ceiling standpoint at 156 was just so good to pass, too good to pass up. This is one of like the top 15 lineups in my entire 300 set. And the top 14 were like 200% owned. It was like 200 and 180s. Then I got down to this lineup at like the 15th spot and it dropped all the way to 156 at 408. So I looked at this lineup and I said, well, this lineup with so much lower ownership than the lineups, 14 lineups above it, like this is where I start from, right? This is what I want. So I basically looked at this and then I said, anything above 156, just, I don't want any. So now I'm just finding lineups that, you know, yeah, I'm giving up a little bit more, much more projection here, but I'm keeping my ownership intact, right? And then I come down, I have the lowest one down here. Ball, Duarte, Porter, Grant, Bamba, Dinwiddie, Harris, Nurkic. And remember, I'm building these lines. Remember, the only reason why it looks like, well, these lineups look pretty, they look pretty chalky, right? They don't look nuts. Yeah, because I'm playing the Showtime, I'm playing the Splash, I'm playing the mid-range jumper. I'm playing the 200, the 100, the 40, the 12, the $12 single entry. That's the largest one I'm playing. But I'm playing smaller field stuff, smaller field. It's not the small field, but small enough field, under 1,000 entries. So I don't have to get nuts, right? I think I came in like 12th in one and 23rd in another. Because obviously if you didn't have like Randall, Jalen, if you didn't have some of those guys, they didn't jam people together. I mean, like I had too much like Dinwiddie and Embiid sitting there with 41 points in a lineup that's like, you know, 20 points behind first place. You're going like, dude, couldn't you, if you would have gotten to 60, I could have won this thing. So yeah, there's smaller field contests. But these are still, truthfully, these are still not bad for the large field stuff. Not bad. Depending on the size of the slate, obviously. Some of these guys, like Jeremy Grant, was barely owned, right? Jeremy Grant, Mo Bamba on DraftKings. He was higher owned on FanDuel. Michael Porter. I mean, these guys put up ceiling games, and there you go. Let's say Michael Porter put up a Jaylen Brown game, or Jeremy Grant put up a 65 burger. Like, then we'd be talking about me winning all the money, even with all these other guys in, right? So in basketball, you don't have to. I mean, I talked about it yesterday. You don't have to sacrifice like 30 points in projection just to play GPP lineups, especially on larger, especially in 11-game slates. You could find good players at low ownership. Now we could question the fact, is Jeremy Grant a good player? Is Michael Porter a good player? But these are good players. I'm not, you're not seeing eighth guys on the bench type of players. You're not seeing that. And you could still play chalky players because they project well. Out of all the sports, NBA is the least amount of variance. It's still high variance. It's not impossible to go like, why aren't they playing LaMelo Ball? Terry Rozier's out. He's 7,700. His ceiling, I mean, his ceiling is 55 at his 80th percentile range. He hit it. So why not? And then if I'm going to play some $3,200 guy, people are going to be playing Desmond Bane. Like, why aren't I playing Chris Duarte since he's on the other side of LaMelo Ball? He's on the other side of the game. So that's why not? And then everyone's avoiding this Pistons-Chicago game. I don't like anyone on the Chicago side, only because it's a bunch of people that cannibalize each other. But who the hell do the Pistons have? Like, their team is horrible. It's Jeremy Grant, and that's about it, right? So let me play Jeremy Grant. But I didn't think of that. I just ran the lineups and he just said, I don't know, it's coming up a lot. Why is he only going to be 13% owned if he's coming up this much? Well, I hope he's only 13% owned because he shouldn't be. He's coming up in more lineups. So to me, that this is the process of building lineups. It is a non-basketball driven approach. Once I see the lineups, then I can think, oh, that makes sense. If I'm going to play this guy, I'm going to play that guy. And maybe you go through the lineups and you see, oh, well, you didn't realize that you didn't group out someone. It's like you wanted that. Like, let's say you had McCollum and Nurkic in a lineup together. Now you could still both. You could play both of them. There's nothing wrong with that. Their 90th percentile outcomes are going to be negatively correlated, but their 65th percentile outcomes are probably correlated. So depending on the size of the contest, maybe you decide you don't mind that. So you just leave the McCollum-Nurkic lineup the way it is. But let's say you go through and you're looking through lineups and you just go, oh, I got a Nurkic-McCollum lineup. I don't want them together. Well, then make a group and rerun your lineups. There you go. Going through the YouTube chat. Tyler Walker, do we still have to ask FanDuel for head-to-head rake refunds for ties? Yes. If you have RotoTracker, there's if you go into your head-to-head section, there's something called a draw report, okay? That'll show you all the draws, all the ties that you've had. Now, what I do is every month for FanDuel, there's even a template there. So if you go into RotoTracker and you set your date, you know, the filter for like a 1 month period, because I do it every month. So I go, okay, for the month of, you know, on November 1st, right? I'm uploading all my stuff through the 31st. Then on November 1st, I go to the head-to-head screen. I do a filter for just October 1st through 31st. And then the draw report will have all the ties. And then I go to there's a thing there that literally has a template for you, an email template. They'll say, hi, my name is whatever. And here's the contest names where all the ties, right? So you just go there and you cut and paste that. And then you open up a support ticket for FanDuel and you cut and paste that. You select account management or whatever as a subject. And you put it in. Typically within 12 hours, it's taken care of. That's how quickly it is. Do you have to do it every day? No. Why bother doing it every day? You'd have to do it every day because you need the 80 to 20 cents back on your $1 head-to-heads. I mean, you have bigger problems then. I could wait till the end of the month to get, you know, whatever the ties are. DK does it automatically, but from what I've been told is that it's a manual process also, and they do it once a week on their schedule. Like you could email them. You could do the same thing for DraftKings. So in the RotoTracker, you could just, there's a DraftKings section and a FanDuel section, right? So click on the DraftKings one, and there's the same type of template, and then email support. You can do that at the end of the month also. What's the worst case scenario? They tell you we've already refunded you for some of these, from all of them. So just to me, I do that once a month. Do it once every 2 months, every 3 months, whatever. Doesn't matter. There's no time period. But DK is supposed to do it automatically. It's just that they get to it and they do it like on a weekly period. So if you don't see a refund on the rake 3 days later, from a contest head-to-head that you had tied in 3 days ago, you know, it'll be there. It'll eventually be there. They'll get to it. But if you feel like they're not getting to it, do the same thing that I do. Wait till the end of the month and just email them and just say, yeah, there you go. And let them tell you, oh, we already got all this. And, oh, okay. Nate Branshaw, in some cases, wouldn't it be more beneficial that a guy doesn't start because they get increased usage on the second unit? Yes. But also typical, a lot of times if they're starting, they're also closing. So when you're starting, you're more likely, I mean, it all depends on the team. But when you're starting, you're more likely to get more minutes, but obviously less usage compared to the second unit, because now you're in with better players. But the thing is with Melton, in the case with Melton, is that most likely he's coming out early and then still leading the second unit. It's not the type of thing where Melton's going to play alongside Ja the entire, you know, for 8 to 10 minutes and then come out and have all his minutes overlap with Ja Morant. And then have Kyle Anderson lead the second unit as a semi-point guard, which he's really not, but he can. So that's why his minutes in our, and see, the thing is, I don't have to bother thinking about it. Like, I know the reason, right? I just explained it to you. Melton's probably going to come out early and then still lead the second unit, which means his 22 to 24 minutes that we originally projected are still going to be there as with the same usage. But now he's going to get 4 to 6 extra minutes 4-8 even, in with the starters on top of that. Well, that's why the projection went. Like, I'm explaining exactly what the projections team that we have here at Roto Grinders is doing, right? Andy Means and Notorious and Jimeno and Tuttle and SBK and Bob Reeves and Alan Lem and whoever's back there. That's what they're discussing. Oh, what does this mean? Well, that's probably what it means. I mean, I know basketball. I know these rotations and everything. So I make it sound like, oh, all you need is the numbers, because all you do need is the numbers. I don't need the explanation on why the projections exist the way it is, but I do know most of the time why, right? This guy's in, that guy's out. What's going to happen? Okay, most likely this guy's projection is going up. Rozier is out. Well, most likely Ball's projection is going to go up and Hayward's projection is going to go up. And whoever the guard, the six-man guard is going to go up. I don't know who that is. I don't even know who that is, but whatever the... Whoever's the guy that normally plays 22 minutes off the bench and leads the second unit is probably going to get another 6 minutes. That was Ishmael, right? So I get a sense of what's going to happen. By how much? I have no idea. I don't know. I'm not doing it. But I played NBA DFS long enough to kind of know what guys are going to move and what's not. But do I need to do that? That's the key question. Do I need to know why? I don't need to know why. And a lot of times looking through projections, I don't feel uncomfortable not knowing why. I think that's a big thing that average DFS players can't handle. They need to know why they're doing something. Right? It sounds weird to say, why wouldn't you want to know why you're doing something? It's like, well, as long I know I'm doing it because the numbers say to do it, but I don't know why the numbers are the way they are. But do you trust? That's why it all starts when I'm going through the entire process of building lineups using Lineup HQ, or any way you build lineups. Do you trust the projections? Because if the answer is no, then I can't help you anymore. Then you're building based on feel. You're trying to weigh 700 variables in your head. I mean, I'm not an intuitive player like that. As long as you could narrow down every player to a number, then the game just becomes putting the numbers together. So just get it to a number for me, or do it yourself. I mean, you could originate your own projections, but why do that when I could just use the Roto-Grinders projections that I'm probably not going to be better than anyway. So just do it that way. But some people are uncomfortable with that. I'm not going to just trust numbers. I'm like, why not? You're going to be doing it in your head, you know, realizing you're weighing things and putting numbers on them, and then you're making choices. But most likely a projection model is going to be less biased and more accurate. And then once you get them down to numbers, you make your line. There you go. Done. Let's see. Mate Branshaw, with a low RGV, which is a salary adjusted plus minus, and a high smash indicate a volatile player. Yes. Such as Bomba yesterday had a 30% smash with a low salary adjusted value. Yes. You could tell by just looking at the ceiling and the floor. Michael Porter Jr. was one of them also. Jeremy Grant didn't have that high of a salary adjusted plus minus, but he has a high ceiling. So yes, that's very, very well spotted, Nate. Someone could have a negative. All the RGB, salary adjusted plus minus, is doing is describing what the distribution curve looks like. Like that RGV versus smash. Like we take a look at today's slate, which I'm not playing. It's a 3-game slate and there's showdown and I got a show and right. I can't be on a 7:30 show for NFL showdown and then have to deal with someone from Milwaukee, Miami is out 10 minutes before the game logs. So all RGV and smash is doing is describing the distribution curve, right? High RGV, high smash, that means a lot more of his outcomes are leaning. I mean, they're not dramatically leaning towards the top. But like something like Jimmy Butler, 15% smash, or Adebayo, more leaning towards the middle. But like Jordan Poole, Dwight Powell, you see here, it's like, oh, Dwight Powell, minus one, his salary adjusted plus minus is like minus 135. Yeah, but look at his ceiling. His ceiling is 10x, right? His floor sucks, right? So his middle value is lower in the distribution curve than other players, but he still has a lot of the space in the high end, right? Damian Lee, right? We take a look. You just go down here. Luke Kennard. I mean, obviously it's a three-game slate, so you're going to have to play some crappy players. Dwayne Dedmon, right? Like, Dwayne Dedmon's median sucks. But you can see his smash percentage is high enough that, like, he's playing. I mean, yes, you may not even play him on the slate like this. But yes, so Nate points out something that very, very, very well thought out. Jrue Holiday is ruled out today, by the way. So see, it's probable here. See, all of this is going to change now. Welcome to NBA. Danilo Gallinari is ruled out today. Oh, Lou Williams is a game time decision. Welcome to NBA, folks. This is NBA. People want to make line. People show up to this show and they want to make lineups. Are you kidding me? Can't make lineups. You can barely make lineups a half an hour before a lot. Doug Montgomery, what site is better for NBA? FanDuel or DraftKings? There's no such thing as better. They're both fine. Depends on what contest you like to play, I guess. So I don't know. There's no such thing as better. Joe Stroop, why does RG not offer different for projected ownership based on contest size? Because it's tough to do. It's tough to be accurate for one contest size, let alone for multiple contest size. But this is the ownership projections typically around the industry, not just RotoGrinders, is based on the larger field contests. You could scale them for the smaller field stuff. That's perfectly fine. You just know that the chalk will be chalkier. So, and that ownership has to be taken away from other players. So like Jeremy Grant, for instance, Jeremy Grant in the Showtime or whatever, the single entry was 7% owned, not 13% owned, right? I projected him for around 13 and he was around that in the $15 large field. But in the small field, he was lower because more people were playing Van Vliet and Dinwiddie and who's that small? Scotty Barnes, those types of guys. True Dawn FM. I know the consensus for reasonable GPP ownership in NFL is less than 125%. Is that range different in NBA? The range is all much more dependent on the slate. Because the ownerships are going to be wildly different. Wildly different. I mean, it's the same as true for NFL as well. You don't get, there are some slates at NBA where there will be three guys that are 60 plus percent owned. I mean, look at yesterday. I mean, just look at yesterday. The only reason why we didn't have certain players with absurd ownerships is because we had so many other people with absurd owners. I mean, like Jaren Jackson, 40%, Barnes, 40%, Dinwiddie, 40%, Van Vliet, 30%. If you set your cap at like, oh, I don't want to play a lineup for more than 100%, like you're fading everyone. You're most likely, the chalk in NBA tends to be better because it's a more projectable sport. But imagine if we didn't have Jaren Jackson on the slate and we didn't have Van Vliet on the slate. Like Dinwiddie would have been 60% owned and Barnes would have been 60% owned. I mean, like everyone else, Maxey would have been 40% owned. We start to take, and there are a lot of slates where there's only like two or three players like this, or one player. There may be one player that's 80% owned. And you know what? The 80% owned player is under-owned, right? You have instances in NBA where there's a player that's going to be 80% owned in your contests that should be 95% owned. So actually the fact that he's 80% owned is good. You have leverage. It's like, how do you play the 80% owned player? It's like, dude, because he should be high. He actually should be higher than that. He's a $3,600 player with a 12x median. Like he's gonna get there like more than 85, 80% of the time, actually. So you're more likely to play. You don't get that in NFL. You don't get that in other sports. So it all depends on what the ownerships of the players are. So that number, 125, like you can't use, there's no number. Yesterday, it happened to be based on what I was running. That sweet spot was around 120 to 160. And it's only because there were a lot of players that were under-owned because of other players being higher, right? That's why I got only one Van Vliet lineup, only one Harris lineup, only two JJJ, Triple J lineups. But most likely, you were still playing some value plays. You're still probably playing Duarte, Barnes, Bane, Melton, whoever. I mean, all those the under 4K, Maxi, still probably playing those guys. But which guys? We had multiple guys to choose from, which kept all the ownership down. So even with between 120 and 160, you still could play two or three of those guys. But there are certain slates where there's only two of those guys. So the only way to drop your ownership is by fading one of them or fading both of them. And fading both of them, your projection may not even be high enough. You may need to play one of them in order to keep your projection high. So the number, whatever that ownership number on the slate, like you're gonna have to run lineups to know, to get a sense of where that range is on every single slate. And the same is true in NFL, by the way. You use the number 125. That doesn't mean anything either. Just that in NFL, we typically don't see 70% owned players. We don't see multiple 30 to 40% owned players. Like a lot of times, like even last week, you had a Kareem Hunt that's like 36% owned or something. And then a couple of guys at 20. Like, okay, well, on average, if you said you're probably somewhere between 75 and 125 in NFL, you're probably right. If you did that every slate without thinking, you'd probably be more slates, you'd be right. You'd be accurate than less accurate. But in NBA, it's all over the place. Michael Dampier, for three-game slates, do you tend to game stack more in NBA compared to larger 10-game slates? So would you maybe allow Jokic and Porter Jr. in some lineups, for example? Yes. Because the opportunity cost is lower. Like those negative correlations, like I don't mind them, unless it's like extreme negative correlation, I don't mind on smaller slates, 2, 3, 4-game slates even. Because what's the opportunity cost? Oh, if you play Jokic and Porter together, that's not allowing me to get who? There's only so many people to choose from. There's only three games going. There's 11 games. Why am I playing Porter with Jokic when I could just play Embiid in that lineup? When I could play Towns instead of Jokic? But there's, at the small forward position in Porter Jr., I could play other guys. I could play Jeremy Grant. I could play Tobias Harris. I could play, there's so many other people there. In a three-game slate, there aren't. Jake C, any tips on building NBA lineups for someone who can't afford the optimizer? Well, if you can't afford projections, this is something that people wouldn't tell you. Okay, Jake C. So I'm not talking about the optimizer itself is just a tool. Okay, so optimizer is like a calculator, but I'm assuming you're talking about projections. Okay, the optimizer is just using whatever project. If I put in the horrible projections into this, doesn't matter. Like, I'm just going to get horrible lines, right? No matter what I do. Most people are like, well, what do I do if I have no projections? Personally, I would say don't play NBA defense. I mean, I'm just being real. You're more likely to get lucky in other sports, the higher variance sports. Like in MLB, if you're like, oh, I don't have projections in MLB. It's like, look at the team totals, right? Look at the Vegas lines or whatever. And just stack the teams with the highest totals with five of those guys from one team and then take the second, same take another team and take three guys. Like you're more likely to get lucky doing. I mean, even if you don't have projections, like it's very easy to just kind of, okay, you could get lucky that way. I mean, you may not be profitable, but you have more of a shot. NFL, you have more of a shot with touchdowns and injuries and who knows. Right, NHL, you know, oh, the highest totals and what are the lines? As long as you're able to figure out and when they change, you know, line one, line two, power play one, you know, all that type of stuff. And just get some goals, get the right goalkeeper, which is just a crapshoot as it is. Like, you're more likely to get lucky. But in NBA, it's tough. So personally, like, play for entertainment's sake. Sure, okay. You want to play low stakes? Play the lowest stakes you can. Play the lowest stakes you can and have fun. That's what I would suggest. But I don't, without any type of projections in NBA, like, dude, I mean, there's only so much intuition you could put into this. I mean, you're gonna be playing against people that are wildly better than you, just for the sake of having reasonable projections. It's really not that expensive. Kai Roach, massive late swap edge. Franz Wagner was just 1.5% owned. Osmo changed him to 68% smash post lock. Dude scored 26 points at 3K, which is fine. But also a lot of other people scored 26 points for 3K. There were just a lot of people to choose from. But if you want to play Franz Wagner, I was more on Jalen Suggs. I mean, I only played six lineups. He didn't fit in, right? I already had, like, at 7 o'clock, I already had Chris Duarte locked anyway. So it's like, I'm done anyway. Let's see. Sheiksy, do you create the groups first before crunching your lineups? Yes. I go through the entire player pool and decide who stays in. Right? And typically, I'm not picking players. Take a look at my player pool from yesterday. Oh my God. It's all the people with the green and the RGB column. I mean, like, and Kyle Anderson turned into this, right? Because obviously his projection went down. Right, I replaced him and I late swapped that lineup out. But look at this. If I go through, it's guys that have a good projection. I mean, that's all it is. I mean, so I'm not going through like for today's slate or something like that, whatever. It's like, oh, you see all these guys that are up here, like from here to here? I'm going to eliminate everyone below. I mean, like that's all I'm doing. But I'm going team by team, right? So I eliminate and I go team by team. So I'm doing something like this. Right? I'm going Indiana, Charlotte, right? I eliminated everyone, right? Underneath this. I said, okay, I got Turner, I got Sabonis, I got Duarte, I got Ball. So now how would I make a group? Do I want Sabonis and Turner together? Probably not. So I make that group, right? Do I want two guys from Pacers together? I don't mind Duarte plus one of these two. And if I'm going to play these guys together, if I'm going to play LaMelo Ball, I might as well play one of these guys. So I'm like, so then I make that group. And then I go to the next game. So I go to Chicago, Detroit. And the only one that projected well was Jeremy Grant. Do I have to make a group for that? No. Then I go to Boston, New York, and I have no one. I go to Washington, Toronto. I have a bunch of guys here. So now how do I want, okay, I don't want Gafford and Harrell together. Right, but if you see here, the guys that I'm including are just all the best projected players. That's it. They're going to be the ones that end up in my line. I don't have to deal with the guys that are all the way in the bottom because even if I build 300 lineups, they're never going to show up in any of the 300 lineups anyway. So why do I have to even make a group with them? They're not going to show up. I just eliminate them completely. Right? So I don't even have to worry about them in groups. But yes, so I make all those groups before I crunch the 300 lineups. And even when I generate the 300 lineups, I still go through, I'll scroll through and see if there are any groups that I just happen to miss. This guy together, do I really want to do that? You know, and you see stuff like that. But you can do this in your head. I mean, if you're only building, I mean, look, I'm building six lineups. You could hand build this if you want. Right? Me personally, since I have a tool, I'd rather just run 300 and pick the six that I want. Right? Go through and see what the numbers are, right? Beforehand, did I think I was going to play six out of six Grant and Duarte? No, I didn't. I did not have a clue at all. I probably would have not chosen that, but based on the numbers, I couldn't refute it. So I'm just like, okay, my night's being decided by this, and that's it. And it worked out. I mean, it cashed, right? Four out of six of my lineups cashed. I was profitable in GPP. DK cash games did great. FanDuel cash, not so much. Ugh. Also, do you lock in players or do the groups make it where you don't have? No, you don't have to lock in players at all. You use conditional player groups. If you sign up for RotoGrinders, we have tutorials on all of this. Stephen Cunningham, high blender for your starting bankroll. Do you start with what you ended with last year or start over? I'm starting with what I ended with. We see here, I have my NBA cash bankroll tracker. So last year, you can see most of it was on FanDuel. I started with 20,000, like fictional. This isn't my whole bank. I have way bigger bank than this. And I made over 20,000 just playing 10% and diversifying between multiple sites. So since I started with the 20,000 last year, I'm just like, okay, this year I'm going to start with 40,000. Right. So made money on DraftKings, lost money on FanDuel. And FanDuel, the thing they don't tell you on FanDuel, just to let you know. Okay. Just to let you know on FanDuel, the limiter, the head-to-head limiter on FanDuel does not apply to auto match. So be aware of that. You're playing head-to-heads on FanDuel. They've added a limiter, which DK has had one for 5 years. And a limiter means that, like, I'm going to put together 50 head-to-heads at different levels and a limit of one, which means opponent can only take one per stakes level. So if I have 10 $50 head-to-heads, 10 $25 head-to-heads, 10 $10 head-to-heads, 10 $5, 10, like someone could come by and take 150, 125, only one. It won't allow you to take more than that. It used to be there was no limiter. Someone could just go and literally take all of them. You have 10 $50 head-to-heads, I'm taking all 10, right? All at once. So what made it problematic is that you in order to prevent scooping, even by dumb people that just like, why are you doing it? Why did you scoop 10 of my $5 head-to-heads when there's a $50 head-to-head you could just take one of? Like, so now I have to go in and now create more. So a lot of times on FanDuel, people were just posting one or two at a time. So they wouldn't have all their volume scooped. So they added this limiter of one. So I'm like, great. It's just like DraftKings. It'll only one per each. But on DraftKings, if it auto matches, it adheres to that also. So like, it doesn't matter that, you know, if there's five guys in the lobby, right, or something, and you have a limit of one and you have eight available, it'll go one, 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 and those three, it'll just won't fill, right? Because the limiter limits to one per stakes level. FanDuel apparently doesn't work that way. FanDuel, if you have 20 unfilled $5 head-to-heads at lock, even with a limit of one, all 20 could end up being with the same people. With, you know, you have 12 get filled of the same person, right, with their head-to-heads that are available. So just to let you know that that's the case. I did not know that yesterday. So I had 600 or $700 worth of head-to-heads against McLovin. Not realizing. I mean, it's not like I don't mind, you know, one, right? Just to have a diversity. I've played so many head-to-heads, it's ridiculous. But like, did I want to play $700 worth of head-to-heads versus one person? No. And that primarily because the limiter doesn't have to do with the auto match. So just figure that out. Maybe people do that beforehand. Okay. So I hope you learned a bunch of stuff here. This is what we do every day. What we do, this is a teaching time, right? Especially for NBA where, like, look, holidays, we don't even know what else is going on, right? At 11 o'clock a.m., we would have been talking about, if we talked about this late, it would have been different people, right? That's why I don't like doing it, because people also listen to the podcast version of this. They listen to 3 o'clock and they go, oh, this is the play, that's the play. No, it's not anymore. 800 things has happened the past 3 hours. So that's why I like reviewing past slates and talking about strategy, talking about how to use the tools, answering your questions, because that's what I do. So hit the thumbs up button on your way out the door. Give me those thummy thumbs. Hit the notification bell to know when we go live later. I'll be on 7:30 tonight. I have STL cards, I believe, to break down the Broncos Browns game, where half the player pool is. It seems like they're not even playing. So we'll be covering that then. And we'll take a look at it stuff tomorrow. Tomorrow's Casual Friday. Right, Casual Friday. We talk about a bunch of stuff all the time. And answer your strategy questions here for DFS on the DFS pregame show every weekday on RotoGrinders.com.